All right, Jack, appreciate the chance to visit. Maybe let's start with where you're at. You're at Thousand Pass, obviously, you announced the sign-up coming up for CRP, coming up on the 27th. Certainly there is that message of good conservation that fits both on the sportsman side, but also obviously for the growers as well. What's the message of that audience today?
Well, the message with the audience today is really kind of recognizing, especially today, we got to sit in on the Farmer of the Year Awards here at Pheasant Fest in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and in amongst all of the thousands of enthusiasts that are here, four farm families were recognized for their work in conservation and their work in developing the diversity of foliage and forage that's needed to have good habitat for pheasants and quails. So it was really neat to see that. And each of those farmers had a similar story to tell where the offerings of the USDA helped in some way accelerate that activity and really forge that partnership between the government and the private landowner and the pheasant group here, Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever as well, right?
Yeah. Looking at the fact sheet, looking at 127 million acres, ways away from that at this point. Is that doable with these commodity prices, Zach?
Well, I don't think the commodity prices are necessarily I don't think there's a tension there between commodity prices and our conservation programs, and we're certainly not trying to compete. Our role with the Conservation Reserve Program is to give producers an alternative to staying in that commodity market and an alternative to take their less productive lands out of production and put them into something else that can help them develop another income stream or develop some other kind of production. I think fundamental in the prospect of pheasant habitat is that it's productive land. It's producing pheasants, it's producing birds, producing songbirds, producing wildlife, and in a lot of cases it can go hand in hand with livestock or grazing animal production. So the 27 million acre cap, I personally see it as a target, and we should try to get there. And some of the other work that we're doing, I think, is really going to help us accelerate towards that number.
How do you mean with the other work?
So the other work we're doing a lot more work, putting a lot of emphasis on our conservation reserve enhancement program, leveraging the flexibilities that have been offered to us in the 2018 Farm Bill that maybe really didn't get fully implemented. So we're reaching out to some of our underserved groups, specifically the tribes in the Great Plains region, helping them enroll land in CREP agreements with a grassland focus to help them maximize the potential of their grazing lands in exchange for a rental rate. So we're at once bringing improved practices to these lands that have been left out of many of the department's soil conservation or climate mitigation activities, and bringing some much needed capital resource to these communities to start to stimulate the other work that's needed in a truly circular ag economy. Your small town butchers, your local grain and feed stores, your small town implement dealers. So we're really looking forward to that opportunity. We've got amongst three tribes there the potential to get 3.1 million acres in within the next year.
You mentioned that those small towns, obviously, you look at the history of CRP, it's got a reputation of maybe having a bit of a negative impact on some of the farm populations and some of those kind of things. Do you see it's a different story today?
I guess I haven't heard anything about the negative impact, but I guess I could see where that might be something that's asserted. I think as much as anything, the negative impacts on these rural communities has been the get bigger, get out mantra. And the work that we're able to do in this administration with the support of the secretary to help the small producers, more small producers are better for those rural communities because that keeps the people there, keeps the capital circulating in those communities. So I'm really happy about that work, and I see the way we're delivering CRP and trying to build out that portfolio of land enrolled in CRP to meet that same end of helping the small producers as well. A critical tool is going to be in maintaining and improving the vitality of our rural communities.
We've had such a focus on climate and carbon and such moving forward. Does CRP fit into that story?
I think CRP fits into that story in that it's helping to ensure that the most productive land stays in thoughtful production, but gives an alternative for the land that maybe is less productive and maybe the producer is just using because it's right there next to the other land. The Farmer of the Year award recipients from South Dakota, they actually mentioned the fact that, you know, in their part of the country, about 10 or 15% of the land that's farmed isn't farmed profitably. So this is a viable tool for those farmers to do something different with that land and then focus their energy on the more productive land.
If I can switch gears over to the emergency relief program, we're into phase two. Obviously, I'm in a region in North Dakota and you know, through the Dakotas and such. We've had such large participation in phase one. Do you see many being eligible in this phase two? Because I know it's meant to fill the gap, and it seems like we're pretty well served in phase one.
Well, in phase one, of course, you know, we added payments to producers that had a record of an indemnified loss due to an eligible weather event. And phase two is really about expanding the safety net for folks that don't have those type of opportunities. And the efficacy of phase two, I think, is going to be one in getting these producers who typically don't have risk management strategies at their disposal or don't have the resources to engage in them, get them some much needed assistance to mitigate the same circumstances that their neighbors had, except they had risk management tools. But it also helps get an idea of what's needed out there, and then we can work with our sister agency, RMA, to contemplate maybe there's some more subsidized crop insurance product that can be developed using the information, because part and parcel of both ERP phase one and two is a linkage requirement where producers are going to have to commit to taking some level of coverage for their crop if it's available for the next 2 years.
Okay. No doubt we've had a significant ad hoc disaster program spending in recent years. Do you anticipate a similar kind of investment this year, or kind of in a different scenario here in 23?
Well, I think first we've got to talk about 22 before we get to 23. And Congress saw clearly that there was the same level of uncovered losses happening because of these climate-related weather disasters. So they appropriated some money for us to do another version of this for 2022. So we're working on putting the final touches on that. Hope to use the processes that we developed in ERP and ELRP phase one and then ERP phase two to deliver that resource a little more timely, because you and I both know that the disaster assistance that comes 2 years later probably, you know, is less than effective. So we're looking at 2022 and what we can do to learn the lessons of ERP phase one and two and ELRP so that we can properly deliver the resources that were allocated to us by Congress. Now, Congress allocated less for the 2022 than they did for 2020 and 2021 if you just split it by years. So we're going to have to try to manage that lack of resource for what we think is probably the same type of demand. We're seeing some signs in some parts of the country that the end of the triple dip La Nina may signal a return to more normal weather patterns, but still there are going to be these producers that have tools that were developed prior to the realization of climate change as an ongoing factor and as a national security and agriculture commodity risk. So we're still working to try to fine-tune those tools and make improvements to those standing disaster programs to better fit while we continue to think about what's needed in the places where there still remain gaps.
So I guess you need to educate me. How much was appropriated for 22 from Congress, and how will this, what's this program called that will happen?
Let me find that in this machine that I'm looking at here. In 2022, we will have $3.741 billion to spend providing assistance to producers who experience losses of revenue quality or production because of weather-related disaster events. Now, as was in the previous iteration, ERP and ELRP, there is a carve-out of $494.5 million for livestock producers, and our goal is to try to use as much of the process that we used in ERP Phase 1 and Phase 2 and ELRP to deliver that assistance, because the feedback we received on ERP Phase 1 was off the charts appreciation. The notion that a producer could receive a pre-populated form based on information that they'd already submitted and simply review it with their crop insurance agent, verify it, sign it, commit to 2 years of linkage, send that back in and have a direct deposit is unheard of. For ELRP, where we use the LFP program data to just make a payment to producers without them doing anything. Again, producers are very satisfied with that, and we think they're going to find a similar level of satisfaction with ERP Phase 2 as we roll out this revenue-based approach.
Great. I'm looking at the clock. I know it's a weekend. Anything we're missing? Also, I don't want to take any more of your time, Jack.
If you hit everything you need to hit, I feel like we've got a chance to talk about the stuff that we think is important and meaningful. I want to thank you for always helping us get the word out. We really appreciate it.